This is Sportsnet 650, and you're entering the chat room at Tyrant Studios downtown.
The chat room is presented by West Coast Dream Machines, now open on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. West Coast Dream Machines, offering pre-owned luxury muscle, classic, and rare and exotic vehicles with in-house leasing available. They carry the finest lines like Ferrari, Lamborghini, and McLaren. Check out their extensive collection at wcdreammachines.com. Now, let's get to the chat room.
Here are your hosts, Joe Leary, Danny Filipponi, and Aaron Chapman.
It is the chat room at Tyrant Studios.
Yes.
High atop the legendary Penthouse nightclub. Joe Leary, along with Danny Filipponi of Penthouse lore and fame. Aaron Chapman, and you guys did a tour a couple of nights ago. This is the sequence of the Penthouse tour that you guys do.
Yeah, we. Hey, it's good to be back, everyone.
Yeah, for sure. How you doing, Danny?
Good, Aaron. Yeah. On Wednesday, we just had our Secrets of the Penthouse tour. It was our 100th tour that we've done in the last 10 years. It was another sold-out tour, and it was great. We had we toured people outside. We take them to the house next door. We take them upstairs into rooms that you're not really allowed to go to during when the club's in operation. And spaghetti dinner. There's a jazz band.
Mama Filipponi spaghetti dinner.
Mama, it's original and spicy. No, it's really lots of fun. It's Secrets of the Penthouse Tour.
You can find out more information where?
On Forbidden Vancouver.
Forbidden Vancouver.
Walking tours, okay. And also on the Penthouse website.
Our guest is El Presidente of 604 Records, Mr. Jonathan Simpkin.
Hey,
welcome.
There he is.
Welcome to the chat room, Jonathan Simpkin. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I think I'm going to pass on that Penthouse tour because as a kid I was here so many times. I've been in the house next door. I've been in every nook
now. How
and
is it as a kid
place.
You were here, Jonathan?
Yeah. Well, Danny and I went to elementary school together.
Oh, my gosh.
So we've known each other since 75.
In fact, when this show was created and John's name was put forth of being one of the guests, I immediately said John would be an absolutely perfect guest. Yeah, our friendship goes way back.
Yeah.
That we used to sleep over at each other's homes. And it's great to see you, John.
I'd rather not talk about that.
great to see you, my
friend. What was the bond? I know John's a big sports fan. We're going to get into that in a moment. But what was the bond that brought you guys together as kids?
I was a troubled youth.
Really?
Yes. So I got you're that's sarcastic, right? Yeah. I'm a troubled adult too, apparently.
Yes.
But I got kicked out of a bunch of elementary schools, and the last time I got kicked out was grade 6, and I ended up going into the school that Danny was in.
Right.
And Danny and his group of friends were very nice to sort of welcome me in with open arms, and all of us have been friends ever since.
Now, we should establish 604 Records is a great story. It just surpassed 20 years.
Yeah.
Started off an accidental record label. You've told me the story, and I don't know if you can condense it, but it was never intended, you and Chad Kruger never intended to have a record label.
Yeah, everything in my career seems like an accident, you know, but that's true. I was a criminal lawyer and a poverty lawyer and fell into the music business by accident, and one of my clients was Nickelback, and we hit it off right from day one. I'm in my 30th year as their lawyer, which is Chad was a teenager when we met, and about 10 years into that relationship, we decided to do this. Chad's an interesting guy in a lot of ways. They would go on tour, like, for a year. Like, it would be literally, like, see in a year. And this is before How You Remind Me. This is before they were a household name. You know, they would tour endlessly. And when they would get off the road, the other guys would sort of disappear into their domestic lives. But Chad's idea of taking a break would be to find other bands to produce. I was his lawyer. Hey, buddy, I just found this band. Can you do up some paper and blah, 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 blah. Nothing ever worked out. I mean, we must have worked with, I don't know, 20 bands until a band called Shock the Day, who none of you have heard of because they changed their name, thankfully, to Default. And that was the first thing that Chad and I ever worked on outside of Nickelback that actually was successful. So we did a deal with them that if we got them a deal, we'd get, you know, percentage of the advance. And we got them a deal, big U.S. deal. That was the genesis of 604 because it got my brain turning like, shit, if we had done that a little bit differently, if we had signed Default to like a 4-record production deal, we would have done so much better. So when we met Tyler Connolly from Theory of a Dead Man maybe a year and a half later, Chad was like, hey, we should do like what we did with Default. I was like, no, 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 no. This time we're going to do something a little different. I incorporated the company that ended up becoming 604 Records. It was, for many years, 634-300 BC LTD. And because the idea wasn't a record company. It was just a production company. Should I keep going with that? I mean, it's,
sure.
Fast forward, I'm in L.A. shopping these demos, these theory demos, and there was a guy at Atlantic Records who really liked it. And he called me, and he said, hey, man, I'm going into an A&R meeting. Just want to be clear about something. Are you shopping Theory of a Dead Man, or are you shopping your label? And I had never really thought about it like that. And it's one of those moments in your life where, like, the world just slowed down. It was like slow motion. Label.
Classic.
You know, I could sort of see the letters coming out of my mouth like alphabet soup. Label. And he was like, okay, dude, cool. Hung up the phone, and I called Chad, and he was, I think, in Kentucky. It's weird what you remember 20 years later, on tour. And I said, hey, man, I think I just started a bidding war in our label. And Chad said, what label?
And go. The rest is history.
Yeah. The rest is history, yeah. Because there was that moment in time in the early 2000s when things that Chad and I had worked on together, I think four things were in the top 10 U.S. How You Remind Me, The Default Song, Wasting My Time, Hero from the Spider-Man soundtrack, and then the second single off of Silver Side Up, I can't remember, Too Bad.
You know, it's funny, talking to John, I mean, being at the Penthouse my entire life, I get the same questions over and over again from customers. You know, oh, Danny, what a crazy life you've led. I can't believe you deal with all this. And, oh, I love to. I know John has answered the same question over and over again, and that's the love and hate relationship with Nickelback. Here I am just yesterday watching the News Hour,
yeah.
And one of the first stories is about Nickelback and their big release that's coming up on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, it's a funny one. Like, people do ask me that all the time. Why do people hate Nickelback? And, you know, my first response is, well, they're the 11th biggest selling musical act in history. So, you know, number one, clearly not everybody hates them. And number two, my personal theory is that they're really normal guys.
Yeah.
And people don't like rock stars to be happy and normal. They like them to be drug-addled and in torment and in conflict. And so, you know, people see Chad being interviewed on TV, and, you know, the guy looks happy as a pig in shit. You know why? He's happy as a pig in shit. He loves being a rock star, and people don't like that.
I always thought, thank God somebody broke out of here, you know, like that we needed, you know, it would feel depressing if there, you know, if we didn't have an act that broke, you know, when 604 started, Jonathan, was it basically, I got the feeling that maybe at least it started that way as a local, looking at local bands or BC bands, but is it still a bit of that, or but you're reaching out to wider perspective?
We named it 604 for a reason,
yeah.
And it's actually, that's actually a funny story. The guy who gave us the money is Lior Cohen, who is a famous guy in the music business. He was the head of Island Def Jam Records. And Nickelback was affiliated with them through Roadrunner, because they were distributed
right.
Roadrunner. And he really wanted us to open up an office in New York or L.A. You got to be in New York. You got to be in L.A. And we kept trying to explain to him, no, you don't get it. There's so much talent on the West Coast of Canada. We want to be like a big fish in this small pond here. And so naming it 604 was a bit of an FU to Lior. It's like, hey, we're not leaving. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's always been a mandate to focus on West Coast artists.
Right.
But some of our biggest successes have been artists from elsewhere, like Coleman Hell. You know, so.
You've also transformed from being, like, I think Marianas Trench was probably the most early famous artist that you created or had on your
theory
label.
Theory of a Dead Man.
Theory, okay. Theory,
then yeah. Marianne is very close in
okay.
time. Yeah.
But you've got a full roster that crosses a number of genres. You've got comedy. Like, 604 has really branched out.
It's crazy. It's, 50 employees
yeah.
or so. 50 employees or so. And that was never the intent. I wasn't trying to build
right.
an empire. It just kind of happened. It's weird. And I don't say that with false modesty. Like, it's there's pressure on that, and a lot of people depend on me for their livelihood. And I love it. I love what I do, but there's a certain weight to that as well.
Hmm. What did in layman's terms, what did "Call Me Maybe" by Carly Rae Jepsen do for 604 Records?
Oh boy. A lot. I mean, that story's its own 4-hour episode, but. Because it is, I believe, still the biggest selling digital single in history.
Wow.
So from a pure financial point of view, I mean, we bought a building. Yeah. You know, like where our headquarters are now.
Yeah.
So financially, it's insane how much money that song has generated. Even now, 11 years later, you know, in the last year, I think just on synchronization, which for those people in the audience, that's, you know, when you get a song in a movie or a commercial, probably north of $2 million in the last year.
Wow.
It's still crazy. Yeah. It just goes and goes. It's over 1.2 billion streams. That's billion with a B on Spotify. The video, which I made 11 years ago for maybe $7,000 after the government grants, is now at 1.6 billion views on YouTube.
Jeez.
It's unbelievable what it's done. It hasn't really changed things otherwise. I mean, it's a funny thing to have a hit like that. A lot of great things happen. A lot of horrible things happen. A lot of relationships get destroyed. You know, when money gets involved in music, it's, you know, there's all sorts of repercussions, positive and negative.
Well, I remember when Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill came out, and the album was massive. I don't even know how many units it sold. Her follow-up did really well, but it was several million off of the Jagged
yes.
Little Pill, and it was considered a flop by comparison. When you have a massive hit like Call Me Maybe, is everything judged? Is that the new bar then, and everything that doesn't meet? Like, if Carly Rae Jepsen doesn't match that success, is she considered to have been a has-been?
It is funny. She's, I think, created a very interesting career for herself because she went from that massive worldwide hit to kind of reinventing herself to some degree as a tastemaker artist, as a, you know, as a tastemaker-type artist. Uh-huh. And she never really had that kind of radio success again. But you know what? She's got a fan base all over the world. She can tour anywhere to between 1,000 and 10,000 people. Japan, she's still massive. So people still love her, and she makes a nice living. Call Me Maybe was a lightning strike. It was a lottery win.
Do you still go to the bars, John? And I know back when we were growing up, and I mean, I see a lot of promoters and a lot of people. They go to bands and try and discover. Do you still do that? Do you still reach out and go to some obscure bar to try and find like the nugget?
I would, but I don't like people very much.
I don't That's like people. Rather misanthropic, are
I
you?
I'm kind of misanthropic. Yeah. I don't have a lot of faith in humanity. I'd love to lie about it and say I have great faith in the future. I don't. Yeah. I have very little faith. I love art. Art I love. When I was younger, I would do that. But I have a young staff. I mean, Danny, you and I are the same age. You know, we're yeah. friggin' old. and I got kids. Like, I'm not doing that like I used to.
I see you out of it.
But I have young staff who do that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see you out of it. Now, I do see you at Canucks games every once in a while.
Every
you,
game.
Yeah. What do you think of the season? I got to ask.
I mean, I've been a season ticket. Well, I went to the very first game the team ever played, 50 however many.
The LA Kings, 1970.
I lost. It was a loss, starting a great tradition of losing at that point. I remember it. I mean, I was 5 or 4 or 6. And
you've been a Canuck fan as long as
from
I've
that
known
day.
You.
Yeah. And I remember Barry Wilkins scored the first goal. I think it was a 3-1 loss.
Yeah.
I was just hooked, and I played hockey. I played ice hockey. So, I mean, it's just in my blood. And the funny thing is, I'm not really a sports fan. I'm not one of those guys who wakes up on Sunday and cracks a beer and watches football all day. It's just hockey. Hockey's so in my blood. Other sports I like, but I don't love. I'm not like passionate like I am about the Canucks. And for me, going to a Canuck game is like a vacation in the middle of the week. I'm not a big vacation guy, much to my wife's chagrin. I think vacations.
I've been to a game with you. It's definitely a fun experience to go to a hockey game with John. So you must be excited for this year. I mean, it's going incredible.
After 9 years of, you know, I got season tickets right when the team started to be shit. And so, which is unfortunate. I still love it. I still loved going. But yeah, this year is unbelievable. The vibe is different. Oh. I took a guy last night. who, in one of our bands, who hadn't been in years, and he was just shocked. He's like, man.
People are singing in the crowd. Did you see it? You could hear it.
It was unbelievable last night. Like, the vibe is so good. I mean, this fan base can be brutal, just brutal when the team's losing. But it's quite the opposite when the team's winning. Like, you sort of almost feel the love in that place. Just, it's very intense.
You're a tireless Canucks supporter. And you're also very vocal on social media.
Too vocal, according to some.
I've heard people say that, but are you apathetic towards, I'm non-filtered. These are my opinions. If you don't like them, don't view them.
I think Danny can back me up because he's known me for so long. I've always been somebody who just speaks my mind. Yeah. And which I think, you know, for example, something like Nickelback, I think that's why I'm still there 30 years later. Yeah. If I was a yes man, I would have probably been kicked on my butt like years ago. You know, they know that I'm going to be honest. It doesn't make me right, but at least they know I'm going to be honest.
So they respect you. So if you say, hey, Chad, you should come and join the chat room at Tyron Studios, maybe bring a guitar, do some acoustic.
That's if I honestly felt that way.
Which you do.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Have another tequila, John.
We'll see. It's still early. It's still early days. Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. Jonathan Simkin, the president of 604 Records, congratulations on incredible success. It's 20 years.
21 now.
21 now, and things are only getting bigger and better, and that live space you have is incredible.
Yeah, and we're really using it a lot more, which we have. So we after Call Me Maybe, we bought a building in Railtown, and it's got a sound stage and studios and our offices. And we do a lot of stuff there. We have a regular comedy show there that Mr. Ivan Decker's even performed at. And we film it. And, you know, the social media has gotten very popular from the stuff we film there. You know, we rent it out. We do music videos in that space. We do shows in that space. And, yeah, the company's become this crazy, you know, there's 604, then there's Light Organ Records, which is the alternative brand, which has, like, the Zolas and Hotel Mira and Fake Shark, and that's doing great. We've got Comedy Here Often, which has won a Juno Award and also is doing great. And we've got Intraset, which is the newest thing, which is our ambient label, because I love ambient music.
Wow.
And sort of to your comment earlier, people do find 604 confusing sometimes because it isn't, like, about one genre.
Yeah.
And a lot of labels are about one genre. There's nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with that. But, you know, there's labels that do nothing but surf punk or, you know, whatever. I just sign stuff I like. I don't overthink it.
Yeah.
So, like, when I signed Jessie Farrell 15 years ago, I didn't even think, like, oh, geez, she's a country artist. I guess we're in the country music business. And now we are. And, you know, all these years later, Dal Smith, JoJo Mason, Andrew Hyatt. So I just sign stuff I like, and I like most music.
Well, we like having you on the show, and it's great that you're connected. I think, of course, childhood friends with Jonathan Simkin and Danny Filippone. Nice connection. We will have you back. Will you join us a second time down the road?
Of course. And I should say also, I've known Aaron for a hell of a long time, too.
Since the 90s.
Like, separately.
90s. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I met you before I knew Danny, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, how did I... Because I remember your band.
Yeah, it must have been early 90s, I think, 92, 93, 94.
Somehow Natasha Dupre fits into it. Like,
yes,
you've known her for... Oh, she was your ex.
Yes, and, yeah.
And I've known her for...
That's it.
And I promised the boys, John, we give a shout-out to our boys. Shout-out to our high school buddies.
How do we do that? To the Cobras? Shout-out to the Cobras?
Hey, guys.
Remember the Cobras,
oh,
Danny?
I love it.
We had a gang in high school called the Cobras.
Yeah.
It's about the lamest thing you could ever...
Oh, but boy, did we love it.
We even had coats. It was so lame. Oh, my God.
The early gang history.
So
here we
go. Shout-out to the Cobras.
Cobras.
Go Cobras. Thank you so much, Jonathan Simkin, president of 604 Records. It is the chat room at Tyron Studios, high atop the penthouse, powered by West Coast Dream Machines, WC Dream Machines. Online, and you can check them out, and also Terramana Tequila, which we're cheering with.
Yes.
Thank you, Jonathan.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
West Coast Dream Machines, a carefully curated collection of luxury, muscle, classic, rare, and exotic cars built from 3 decades of sourcing expertise. A different kind of supercar showroom. 1519 Clyde Avenue, West Vancouver. Look, salivate, order, lease, purchase, finance. Get behind the wheel of your dream Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati, Rolls, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston Martin machine. West Coast Dream Machines. WCDreamMachines.com. 778-606-FAST.
Our cars are faster.
You're listening to the chat room at Tyron Studios downtown, and this is Sportsnet 650 AM 96.9 FM HD3. The chat room is presented by West Coast Dream Machines on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. West Coast Dream Machines is Vancouver's supercar dealership, offering pre-owned luxury, muscle, classic, and rare and exotic vehicles with in-house leasing available. It's a carefully curated collection of premium rides, exotic cars, luxury vehicles, resto mods, and modified muscle.
muscle cars, all shipped worldwide. They carry the finest lines like Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, and McLaren. Check out their extensive collection at WCDreamMachines.com. Now, back to the chat room. And again, your hosts, Joe Leary, Danny Filippone, and Aaron Chapman.
And we welcome you back to the chat room at Tyron Studios, high atop the penthouse. Legendary penthouse on Seymour Street in downtown Vancouver. Joe Leary along with Danny Filippone and Aaron Chapman. And we are joined by the morning duo, the morning tandem of Sportsnet 650, Halford and Brough, Mike Halford, Jason Brough. Welcome to our little
Happy to be here.
This is
what
great.
Up,
Joe?
It's
a different duo than you normally see at the penthouse.
How are you?
Yeah. It's a different kind of penthouse
I
duo.
I can attest, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
different
correct.
Vibe. Now, again, do you guys like being on the receiving end, or do you like
what?
Being on the...
What?
In terms of being interviewed, do you prefer to be the questioner
the
or the answer? Okay. The answer. What do you like?
You know what? We don't ever talk about ourselves. This is a first for us, so we don't ever talk about ourselves. We never get interviewed, actually.
Yeah,
occasionally,
yeah.
We'll show on someone else's show, but they're not asking us about us. They're asking us about the Canucks.
We're just going to turn it around on you.
Okay, are you?
The whole time. Yeah.
We answer questions with questions.
Well, yeah. I'm going to start off with a doozy because we just celebrated. Oh, I shouldn't say celebrated. We just surpassed the three-year anniversary of, I believe it was February 9th.
That's correct.
When your careers came to a screeching halt at TSN 1040. You were on the air. I am literally in my bed getting, I'm getting buzzed on my phone. It's like, what's going on at 1040? And I turn it on, and there's this weird music loop playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, first of all, you're thinking April 1st? No, it's not April 1st.
Yeah.
What's going on here? What was it like for you guys? Because you saw your careers come to an end that day.
So we got an email while we were on the air, maybe half an hour before the end, and all it said was, there's a meeting about the future of 1040.
Urgent, all hands. Everyone must attend.
So, wow. And so Mike and I were like, this isn't good. And immediately texted a few people, including our agent, like, what's going on here? But had to come back from the break or whatever and, you know, carry on as if we were, you know, we didn't know what was going on. So we eventually got to the, I guess it was the 9 o'clock hour, and our producer at the time, Ian McClatchy, was like, I don't have control of the board. So they'd taken remote control of the board.
Like a coup.
And
yeah.
Then
yeah, a coup, yeah.
And then
an incredibly,
you know,
low stakes coup, but a coup.
Yeah, but so, actually
I'm dramatizing it.
But like when the news came out, because we'd had that email, we both had the discussion off air as like, they're shutting this place down for sure. So it wasn't it was a shock then, but it was less of a shock when it actually came out. And it's funny, like, Mike and I weren't, like, some people were so angry, but we kind of had to be like, we don't have time to be super angry about it. We had to figure out what to do. Fortunately, we only probably lasted like a week or two without knowing that we had some irons in the fire,
yeah,
including the 650 job. So we had a week of, I think I had one day when I really panicked. I'm like, oh my God, am I going to have to get a real job? Like, putting together a resume would just be a nightmare. I'm like,
I was regretting, like, all my life decisions. I should have taken that job at ING out of college.
Yeah.
I could have been in underwriting insurance. It would have been so much more stable.
Yeah.
Would have been such a happier person.
Yeah. Like, you realize after doing this job for, you know, however long it was, I was like, I'm qualified for nothing.
Did you guys have any idea, any clue?
None.
Sometimes you get a bit of a clue. Someone tips you
off.
Dude,
I didn't know they could shut down a radio station. I'm like, that's legal? You can do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I had no idea.
I couldn't shut down this place if I tried. I mean, it would...
Well, the worst part is, like, we grinded through the pandemic with no sports. Like, we worked hard. And a lot of people said, like, you know, that was some of the best work you guys did because you still made the show interesting, and we had to bring on all sorts of people and tell stories, and we also had to talk about the pandemic and, you know, bring in some humor if we could. And then they were like, all right, congratulations, welcome, like, you got through it, you're gone.
Yeah, now you're all summarily dismissed. Please leave.
Yeah.
And then we had to be out of there in a half hour, and HR, like, firing line style, had all of our severance packages to go.
Yeah.
So we went from our studio downstairs to HR, handed a packet, and they're like, please leave. And then everything stopped working. Emails, key cards, all that stuff.
It's amazing.
And people, people were like, weren't you angry that you didn't get a say? I'm like, I don't blame them one bit for doing it how they did, because we would have been killing them on the air.
If they let us go an extra hour, it would have been
killing them on the air.
I know that, but at the same time, I got gassed from one of their major cutbacks, I think, a couple of years prior. And what bothered me was, do you not respect me or trust me enough as a professional? Like, I'm not going to do the George Carlin seven nasty words.
Oh, I would have. I would have. Really? They were right not to trust me.
Yeah, I was up to 14 at that point, dude.
I wouldn't have been angry, but we would have definitely, like, poked fun.
You would have blown
them.
You would have blown the career.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. Hopefully not.
I don't know. I have no idea what we would have done. Like, again, and in the moment, like, you're realizing that you've lost your job.
Yeah.
And, again, it's like, I don't even think they can shut down a radio station. You have to keep the frequency. And there's all these people coming in who are going to work that day, like Donnie and Moja coming in. They're like, how's it going? I'm like, it's about to get worse, way worse. Yeah, so, don't get comfortable.
And then Donnie gave us all COVID.
Which was chef's kiss. It's the real topper to the whole thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Our guests are Halford and Brough, of course, the morning show at Sportsnet 650. This is the chat room at Tyron Studios, powered by West Coast Dream Machines, Terramana Tequila, and Wild Eye Beer. Okay, I got to ask you, because when you do talk radio, I've done Top 40 radio where people are generally nice to you on the phones because they want to hear music and stuff like that. But when you're in the talk format, whether it's generic talk or sports talk, it's polarizing, and you get people that think you suck. They hate you. How do you deal with that? Poorly. So if I disagree with your opinion, I can't stand Halford and Brough. They suck. But yet they still listen to you to suck.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's a really interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't ever address it on the air, because then it just becomes this navel-gazing exercise where the people are like, now can you talk about sports or the Canucks instead of yourself?
The toughest thing to differentiate is criticism that is valid and criticism that is like coming from lunatics, right? Because you should listen to criticism sometimes. Right. And then and so sometimes if people text in, they can be harsh, but we can be harsh with the Canucks. So it's hard to hear criticism sometimes, but we try not to be too defensive. We often fail with that. But, sometimes you'll get it on social media and then you go to their account and like, they've been like tweeting at Nancy Pelosi all day, so you're like, all right, I don't really care about this guy.
You know? Like,
are you allowed to be cheerleaders if you want to be for the Canucks, or do you try and maintain neutrality?
I like to think we maintain neutrality, but I think we are not unique anymore, but maybe unique if you went back 30 years ago. Like, I want them to do well. I really do. So in some ways, I might be harder on them than someone who doesn't really care. Like, I care. Yeah. I want them to do well. And I think the one thing that people don't understand is that business is so much better when the Canucks are good and people are interested in it.
Business
is good, right?
Yeah,
like,
you know what? To talk
about, does that work here too?
Yeah, when we were closed during the pandemic, we couldn't talk about the club because we were closed. So we used our marquee in the front, the Penthouse marquee, which worked wonders for the 18 months. But when the Canucks are on a roll, when the BC Lions or someone's, man, oh, man, can you tell as a nightclub operator, a restaurateur, whatever you are in the hospital, does it ever, like even a game was on the other night, Canucks being out of town for a while, they come back for the first time, you're packed. Mm-hmm. People aren't coming here just to watch the game. It's people are coming downtown just to be part of the vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. They just want to have a good time.
Yeah, you walk around downtown, you go up and down the Granville Mall area, there's just people walking around, high-fiving each other.
Yeah. No, it's a good scene, and it's a good vibe.
Yeah, the last time the Canucks were in the playoffs, it was hard to get a seat in a bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what we're hoping for this year, too, right? Because the other thing, too, is, like, if you don't take yourselves too seriously, which clearly we don't, and there's no good reason to anyway, but it allows you to be more – if you're self-deprecating, then it's easier to take shots at other things.
I know in the – it's such a big – being a pair, you know, you two. Is there another pair that you guys follow or – look up to or sort of try and be like? I mean, I know on TV there's so many in the States and, all the big guys. Is there either you guys sort of chat about and say, did you see that show?
We never thought we were going to do this. We were in print for the longest time.
Wow.
Right? And then we just kind of stumbled onto radio because we wanted to do something different.
I think we take something from everyone. You know? We've never had mentors. We've never had formal mentors. Yeah.
Or formal training.
You're just winging it.
We've had each other. And that's something that a lot of people haven't had.
It obviously works. You guys are an amazing team together.
We've worked together for a long time.
How many years is it now?
15?
Well, 15 years.
Yeah, 2007 is when we started. We were working at an old gambling company together. We worked at Bodog back in the day.
Oh, wow.
That's how we met.
Bodog.
And then we'd work till noon, and then we're like, well, it's quitting time. And then we're like, should we do something productive with our afternoons? And then we started blogging and then working for the paper and everything, too.
Have you ever had any Pratt and Taylor moments like the Doyle Brunson blow up over poker?
Well, we've had fights.
We fight.
But point where like you just don't really want to see each other?
Like right now?
No, we're pretty good at talking those things out. But for a lot of the producers that come in, like a new producer will be like, "Oh my god, these guys like fight and swear at each other and off air," and they're just like, "But that's just how we are." Yeah. You know, we want to have a good show at the end of the day. So, you know, and it's in the morning. Sometimes you're grumpy, right? You're in a bad mood. Something goes wrong. Something screws up and you'll snap at someone. But I think, Halford's a very patient guy because if we're honest, I'm doing most of the snapping. Halford has a temper too. And if he goes off on you, you're going to know about it. So
what time do you have to get up to start the show?
This is not that bad for me, man. Yeah. It's like 5:30. It's really not bad. I'm pretty close to the studio, so
the show starts at 6, so consider the window we're talking about.
I'm a little earlier.
I'm up at 4:30. I usually go to bed around 11:30 or midnight. So
So you have a big nap during the day.
It's not even a nap. It's an entire second. There's a shower involved. There's blackout drapes. It's totally
blackout drapes.
Yeah, it's like a vampire's life minus all the cool stuff.
When you go and watch a game, do you watch as a fan or do you watch as a talk show host? Because you're going to be talking about it the next
fan.
Time. Fan.
Yeah.
You're at the game, I'm a fan, and I want to. I want a few drinks.
I haven't been into the building as a media member in like, I don't know, 10 years maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't go to the press box much anymore
just because a weekday game, you're there late. Yeah. You're kind of more wired when you're at the game too. But if I'm watching the game at home, I'm watching it with my laptop on my lap taking notes. So I watch it a little bit differently, I would say.
And do you find you guys are normally in sync because you're both very active on social media during games, but you're not conferring with each other. You're stating your opinion, Jason. Mike, you're stating your opinion. Do you find you're pretty much in sync generally in what you see?
I leave it to him. He's way better at it. He's snappier and he's more clever.
Yeah.
Takes me a while. And then by the time I have a good idea, it's like, that's the third period. I'm making a joke from the pregame. That's no good. So, I don't really have – he's way better at it than I am.
So I want to ask you guys, Danny and Aaron, because I'm connected to radio, but you guys are not. When you listen to radio, do you let radio hosts like Halford and Brough help formulate your opinions, or do you look at them as, well, that's just your thoughts, man. I got my own.
Well, like anything, you're gonna agree or disagree with your own, maybe your own biases and whatnot. But I always find, especially, you know, there's so many good sports reporters, so much good sports reporting in Vancouver over the years that it's often helping inform me. I would ask you guys, just as a fan, what do you think we should be watching with the Canucks maybe in the coming months and weeks here, or weeks and months, you know,
as we get closer? Obviously, the trade deadline's coming up near the beginning of March. I think what we've focused on in the last few days is just how the top six is going to come together. It looks like they've got some potential with that Swedish line of Lindholm, Petey, and Hoglander. Miller and Besser, I think they're together, you know. Maybe Pugh Suter on the other side, but will they go out and get another winger? The Phil Kessel story is like...
It's bizarre.
I'm very excited about that to
come to fruition. Yeah. That's going to be
like, more for the entertainment value, though. Like, I just don't see where he fits in the lineup.
He wasn't in shape when he was in shape.
Hold on. He doesn't look like he's in shape.
No.
Okay. He's a ridiculous athlete.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
I said it on the air the other day. Whoever was listening, I'm like, Phil Kessel's a better athlete than you. I don't care what you do. You might not look like a better athlete than you, but he is. Like, he's super ridiculously strong, and he's really fast, and he's got, like, great hand-eye coordination, all these things that make a great athlete. He just looks like he entered dad bod at like 20, right?
Yeah.
So. When I listen to a show in the morning, I actually think I have a bit of a different approach. I actually sort of let you guys sort of just lead me through the day, lead me through the morning, mm-hmm. and I sort of go there for the journey for you two. And I do that with other broadcasts I listen to. I sort of want to be part of your journey and sort of how if you have a bad day, I want to hear about it. I just don't want to hear all the stats all the time. So I always right. sort of look at it as sort of an adventure through you guys and how you sort of ride with the team.
We try and be entertaining. I don't think there's anything worse than listening to someone who's trying to be a sports knower.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know a lot about sports.
To know
I'm like,
the guys.
Sweet. Like, yeah. that's awesome. You probably know more about sports than me, but... Yeah. Like I hope that people would like to hear our back and forth and
I agree.
You know a little bit of personality. Without,
that's why it's nice to have you on the show to finally sit down with you guys and sort of get to meet you guys when you're not.
We're just normal dudes.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Like, yeah. Although you are dressed up in a wonderful looking suit today.
Yeah, right? I just came from a celebration of life, so yeah. I was so going from church to the penthouse is quite the juxtaposition.
Not the first time that's happened.
Now I don't know where you sit on. Do you want to make premature predictions or not? I know you do your lock of the week,
yeah.
and you're quite willing to make your football predictions.
They pass well,
how are you? Have you ventured a guess as how you're calling how this season ends for the Vancouver Canucks?
I have no idea, Joe. Yeah, and no idea. I'm gonna keep at it like this because this season, I have never been more surprised by a team.
Right.
Never. No, I don't even think any other team. Like I'm not talking about a Canucks team. I'm talking about any team that I've followed closely.
Yeah.
This is just. I did not see this coming, and part of me is still like, what trick are the hockey gods playing on me?
At the risk of jinxing the whole thing, it's like they haven't lost more than two games in a row all year.
Their road trips are incredible.
Nobody's been hurt.
Yeah. It's so different from 2011. Like I went into 2011 like, this is our year.
Yeah.
This is our year to win the cup. And, sure, there were still doubts that crept in from time to time, but –
The town could totally taste it.
Yeah. I remember the first round. It was kind of like, it was exciting with Chicago, but it was kind of like, we'll get by these guys.
Yeah.
And then we'll get by Nashville. No problem. We should be in the final. And then whoever we play in the final, like, we're winning.
I don't want to throw a sour note into this, but in light of what happened in Kansas City the other day with the Super Bowl Chiefs championship, you know, the mass shooting event, do you think, because we've seen rioting here. I mean, it's not uncommon for a championship celebration to turn ugly. We've seen it here.
10,000 cops.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
one cop to every person.
Do you think that's going to curtail celebratory parades if indeed the Canucks do have a championship season?
Hold on. Are we talking about how we're going to control the parade, not just how we're going to have the parade?
Well, I'm saying
is that the level that we've gone to?
This is
here?
very hypothetical.
This
but I'm saying that if there's a celebration parade in any city, do you think that what happened in Kansas City the other day is going to have a chilling effect on celebrations?
No, I think more likely what happened in 2011 is going to have a chilling event in Vancouver. Yeah. If it happens in Vancouver. They are going to have to be a lot more controlled with who they invite. So I think at the time, the politicians in the city were fighting this notion that we are a no-fun city, right? And the Olympics went so well, but it's a different vibe, that they were like, we'll just do the same. And there was like, if the cops smile at everyone, then we won't have any problems. Like, be friendly. And like, it's a different vibe. And remember those days, like, they were long days. It was nice out. Because it was June and not February. Yeah. So people were in the sun drinking all day. They wanted people to come down. There was no control whatsoever. There was no security. There was no ticketing or anything. They will have a very different plan if it happens.
And it's interesting that in the history of the city, historically speaking, all the riots that have happened, whether they've been race riots, sports riots, concert riots.
Yeah.
They've always happened in good weather in Vancouver. They've always none of them ever happened in the winter of months.
Well, I remember the Boston mayor. People were like, should we have something downtown? And he was like, what are you, out of your mind? Like,
God, no. Don't do that.
Did you see Vancouver?
No, they were just like, no. Yeah. I remember in 94, the New York people were worried about problems in New York, but New York has so much more experience in crowd control that they didn't yeah. have any problems, and we were the ones that had problems.
Well,
maybe we'll win this time. It'll be different.
Maybe
right?
maybe we will. I want to put a bow on this by saying, and I mean this sincerely, because I come from the world of broadcast and got into print, and now I do both. You come from the world of print and do broadcast, and you do it seamlessly, because a lot of times those that can write can't talk. Those that can talk can't write. You've made that transition beautifully, and I mean that sincerely.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Joe, and yeah. happy to be here with you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. By the way, you're entitled to a shot of Terramana Tequila, which is our official tequila sponsor.
All right.
That's the Rocks tequila.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Is Moj taking that stuff down to Super Bowl?
Say, did Moj bring it here? Yeah.
Moj had a salmon for tequila exchange down there.
Mike Halford, Jason Brough, Halford and Brough, the morning team at Sportsnet 650. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, guys.
Nice to meet you guys.
Fantastic.
Those dreams you've been chasing across the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance to Paris, Frankfurt, and London car shows. They've come home to West Coast Dream Machines in West Van. Come see a carefully curated collection of luxury, muscle, classic, rare, and exotic dream machines. Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati, from late model to 60s. In-house leasing and financing to make your dreams come true faster. The chase is over. West Coast Dream Machines. WCDreamMachines.com. 778-606-FAST.
Our cars are faster.
You're listening to The Chat Room at Tyron Studios downtown, and this is Sportsnet 650 AM, 96.9 FM HD3. The Chat Room is presented by West Coast Dream Machines on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. West Coast Dream Machines is Vancouver's supercar dealership, offering pre-owned luxury, muscle, classic, and rare and exotic vehicles with in-house leasing available. It's a carefully curated collection of premium rides, exotic cars, luxury vehicles, resto mods, and modified muscle cars, all shipped worldwide. They carry the finest lines like Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, and McLaren. Check out their extensive collection at WCDreamMachines.com. Now, back to the chat room. And again, your hosts, Joe Leary, Danny Filipponi, and Aaron Chapman.
We welcome you back to the chat room at Tyron Studios, high atop the legendary Penthouse Nightclub on Seymour Street in downtown Vancouver, powered by Terramana Tequila and Wild Eye Beer. We just took our dinner break, and again, our title sponsor, West Coast Dream Machines, on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. High-end, exotic, every kind of beautiful exotic car you can imagine.
Every kind.
Pre-owned. Check them out online, West Coast or WCDreamMachines.com. We are joined by, I don't even know what the descriptor is. Do I call you funny man, or do we just say Ivan Decker? I don't know what we do. Ivan Decker, ladies.
The name precedes itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
One of the best.
The name precedes itself.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Comedian, I guess. But yeah, that has so many meanings now. I am a man and I am funny, so I guess that applies.
When did you start using that? If someone introduced themselves to you going, hey, I'm Joe, I work in radio, what do you do? You go, hey, I'm Ivan, I'm a comedian. When did the fact you could actually call yourself a comedian happen?
Yeah, I don't know, because that's an interesting thing. Like, I remember when I was brand new at comedy, I was very excited to tell people I was a comedian. And then I learned very quickly that, like, if you're getting a haircut, you should not tell the barber you're a comedian because it'll turn into a nightmare. Or like an Uber driver, it's like, oh, I'm trapped with somebody that's now. They're going to do bits with you the whole time. And like sometimes they get really dirty. They get really blue for some reason. Like I've had Uber drivers just start cursing at me. I'm like, ah, this is... So like if I fly now and the person next to me is like, what do you do? I'm like, I am a concrete finisher. They're like, let me see your hands. No, you weren't. It's a bad lie. But I think I started referring to myself as a comedian like at the border, like once it was on my tax return.
Mm. So that's how you file now. You file as a comedian.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I remember the first time I did it, and I was like, this is it. And I remember during the pandemic when I was like, this is it. This is my only job. This is all I do.
That's it.
And it was a big moment. I feel very blessed.
That's excellent.
Did you work through the pandemic?
I did, yeah. I did Zoom stuff. I didn't go on CERB. I don't know if that's controversial to say. But I was lucky enough to be making money. So I got to do some Zoom gigs and a few.
I saw people doing backyard comedy parties.
Yes, yeah. Yes. There were some outdoor shows. I did a drive-in movie theater in Montreal, which was very fun. Like, the people were in the cars, like, if they liked a joke, they would like flash their headlights or like honk. So it's like very weird because you hear no laughs at all. I think they tune like an old drive-in. They tune their radio.
That's right. Great.
And then your voice comes through their car.
That's funny.
So like you, basically, I've done what you've done.
So I'm just curious though. Like, you know, you're now a married man.
Yes.
But when you were on the dating scene, or when you're introduced to people and they hear that you're a comedian, are they trying to do shtick on you, or are they expecting you to do shtick on them, or what?
Yeah, I think there is an expectation that you're like going to be hilarious all the time, which is great when you're first dating somebody because it's a lot of laughs and it's fun. But then when the first like fight or like serious thing happens, and I have a problem where like I sound sarcastic all the time. So like if I'm complimenting, I'm getting fights with girls. I'd be like, ah, this dinner is really good. And they'd be like, don't. Why are you being so rude? I was like, no, I mean it. And they're like, you don't sound like you mean it.
I have guys who come into the Penthouse quite often, and they tell me they're a magician. So immediately, show me a trick.
Show me a trick. Yeah.
So when people run into you and they recognize you, do they come up to you and do they say, what do you got? Do they
sometimes,
ask you?
Sometimes, yeah. And if I'm on the street, I won't like do my act.
Sure.
Like if somebody really wants,
do you test something out on them?
If the conversation manages to go that way, but I don't want to be like, hey, here's a new thing I'm trying out. That's for my wife. Yeah. No, if I'm on the street, I'll do like street jokes.
We're still
like,
talking about your act there, obviously.
Now, yeah. I know that you have been in this venue. You've been at the chat room, or you've been at Tyrant Studios, I should say. So you will like come here occasionally and try out new material. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is such a cool spot. I love doing stand up here. It's got this perfect vibe, but the curtain and the ceilings, the way it's set up, it's just. I remember when it first started out, I was one of the first comics on, and
you
I
were.
Was so excited when I got here, because, you know, I was like, oh, this it's such an old building, and I love, like, you know, my comedy style is sort of a throwback style anyway, so I was like, I feel like I fit the vibe here, and it was just so cool, and so I was so happy to come here and see the way that the room was set up, and I've had great times. But yeah, if I'm in town, over the holidays is usually when I'm around.
Yeah, when Ivan appears at Tyrant, it sells up pretty fast, right? It really does. He's really good.
Ivan, I know you sort of divide your time between Vancouver and Los Angeles now.
Yeah.
For those fans that have seen your act before, especially maybe in your earlier Vancouver days, there were lots of local references.
Yes.
And stories that you would build around that you immediately, if you're from Vancouver, you would know what you were talking about. Obviously, when you're in L.A., you can't use those, maybe some of those same references to you. Do you change them? Have you invented a whole new accent then? Obviously, the set's always changing, but yeah.
I try to have different stuff about wherever I am locally. And Vancouver, because I spent so much time here, I developed material about it. I mean, it's that double-edged sword where, like, it's very fun to do material about Vancouver because people really get it. And it's, you know, it's just something that I'll think just by living in the city day to day. Like, I had a lot of stuff about the SkyTrain and I talked about the Olympics back in the day. And
as somebody that's written a lot about Vancouver, I loved it, what you were doing. And it was unique, and it seemed a little bit in town, too, as much as you were doing. Yeah.
Did you ever do improv?
I did a little bit of improv.
At Granville Island?
Yeah, later on, after I'd done stand-up for a while, I was like, oh, I should kind of get an improv. Maybe it would help me with acting and that kind of thing. And I had a good time, but it was very, like...
It looks stressful as an audience member, just watching.
Oh, for sure. Holy and you're man. Very much dependent on the other people on stage with you. And as someone who's used to being the solo, like, I'm in charge of everything. I mean, that's why improvisers are probably so happy. It's because, like, if a show goes poorly, they can blame the other people.
Sure.
Whereas, like, if I do poorly, it's only my fault. I'm the only one up there.
How do you know when you start a show? How instantly do you know when you have a crowd who are into it? Like, can you tell? Can you work the crowd to the point where, okay, I've got to get these guys a little more into it? Or can you feel? How does that work?
Oh, yeah. That's the whole game, is just feeling that energy and where it's going to be. And, yeah, there's definitely some shows that are so incredible where you walk out right away and they love you. And it's just – it's so fun when people have decided that they're – going to have a good time already, which is weird because it's like, that should be everybody.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how many people come to a stand-up comedy show and they're still not convinced that they're going to have a good time or not.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm on third. Like, I'm not even up first. I'm not at the end of the show. You've already been here for an hour and you're still like, I don't know if I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
You're like,
makes sense.
Have you
had those occasions where, like, if a joke lands a couple of times in a row and you feel pretty confident about it, and then one night you throw it out there and it doesn't land? Have you had those moments where it's like, what went wrong?
All the time. All the time. That's always the key, is like, you get a new joke that's doing well and you're like excited about it. And then you move it early on, like you open with it. And then people are like, man, we don't like this. Wow.
The other thing I was going to ask you is, like, I know you do corporate gigs. We were talking about that before. But let's say you're being flown out to Moncton, New Brunswick for a corporate gig for this company.
Oh, yeah. Crab cakes, baby.
Are you doing some research? Like, is there a local disgraced politician? Is there a political scandal I need to know about? Like, what kind of research do you do when you go out of town?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I mostly do stuff. Like, I'll ask the company, like, what's the main thing your employees are talking about right now? And I'll try to reference it a little bit. Sometimes that doesn't work, though. Like, sometimes they're like, just do your act. It's fine. We don't need you doing.
Don't talk about us.
Yeah, it depends. Like, you don't want to seem like a false insider, because sometimes people can smell that on you. They're like, wait. Because, like, I did. So I went to a Christmas party for my wife's company, and it's very weird to go and watch corporate entertainment. Like, I'd never seen corporate entertainment from the other side. We went to a rodeo, and the rodeo organizer, I don't even know who, rodeo master? I don't know what it's called. But he had, like, clearly asked a bunch of stuff about the company, and he would just, like, Mad Libs it in to his script. So he'd be like, riding this bull is tougher than doing inventory with Susan. And, like, it killed. The crowd loved it. So I was like, I should just be doing that. I don't know why I'm trying to write jokes.
In the era we live in, what is off limits, or is anything off limits on stage when you're doing live comedy?
I think the audience will tell you. I think it's really the thing where, like, I mean, I talk about popcorn for 10 minutes, so it's like you can, if you are passionate about something and you find a way to bring it up and talk to people about it, you can. And if people laugh at it, then you can keep doing it. And if people don't like it, they'll let you know. And I think off limits changes audience to audience too, right? I think having hard and fast rules on that, we live in such a fast-paced, evolving society, and so if you try to, like, keep up with that, if that's at the forefront of your mind before the creativity, I think creativity will have trouble trying to be bound in by that. And so I think you need to, like, do what you think is funny, and if it doesn't work because it's crossed a line, or if somebody has an issue with it and they bring it up with you, then you can decide. But I think that's why it's important to get on stage as much as you can and have those places you can go where.
Well, let me ask you guys, Danny and Aaron, like, do you think, I mean, again, I think I mentioned this to Ivan when we met a couple weeks ago, but prior to knowing what we learned about Bill Cosby, the thing that we always admired about him was that he didn't even say damn. I mean, it was a totally clean set of comedy. Do you need colored language to make a comedy bit funny? What do you think?
I don't think so. I've seen lots of clean comedians that are great. Brian Regan is amazing. There's so many of them out there. That's a whole genre,
yeah.
Unto itself, really. And in terms of any subject that's, I don't know, but it's all in the setup. It's in the two or three jokes you tell before that one that gets you there, mm-hmm. I think, as well.
I ask that because you're relatively clean.
Yeah. I always stayed clean. I think just because I started so young.
And you look clean, by the way.
You do.
Oh, thank you.
You're clean.
Yeah. I did. I went to a gas station and had a shower before.
Sure, just before you got here, yeah. I was always interested. You know, some of the comedians I've seen, maybe one thing the public doesn't sort of think about or know so much about what you do is there's always a lot of sort of analysis and editing of what you do after the show. And I know a lot of guys will hide their cell phone on the stool there to record their set just to listen to later.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not just listening to, maybe I should have told that joke before the other one, but even some of the wording.
Oh, absolutely.
It's
even
all
the intonation. Like, I went up in that word, I should have gone down.
Down. Yeah.
Because that's a big thing. You watch new comics, they ask their punchlines. They'd be like, right. Are you guys? And then I went to the library. And you see that their voice goes up. And I'm like, you got to tell your punchlines.
Yeah.
You talk about your wife during your shows?
A little bit, yeah. She's starting to creep in there.
Has she heard any of this?
Oh, yeah. I always got to run it by her first.
Wow.
Yeah. So I wouldn't do anything that I'm like. Because that's the other thing. When a lot of comics that I started with that were very dirty, one of the reasons why I stayed clean, I think, is because they were like, oh, God, like, my parents are coming, and I talk all about all this, like,
sure.
Lewd stuff, and they're like, they dread the fact. I'm like, my parents live in the city. Like, they're going to come. They're nice people. They support me. So it's like, I can't do anything in my
That's
act
great.
That I wouldn't want them to
That's
see.
I've never understood the mentality of a heckler, because you're an unarmed man trying to attack somebody on stage with a microphone. So you're up on stage, and I know you've had it. You're a funny guy, but I'm sure you've had, you suck. What's the mentality? Have you ever tried to rationalize? What do they think they're gaining by doing that?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's a weird world now, too, where I think people think that they're going to be in a video, maybe.
Right,
you know, it's like, I think there's a real part of somebody who wants to attack an artist. It's like, I always try to rationalize being like, well, you wish you could do this, but you can't, and that's fine. And that, when that's in your brain and you know, you already know what they're doing. Because it's like, very rarely are people that like enjoy comedy and know what's going on. They're not going to heckle a show unless they are like, you know, unless someone's really bad and they're doing it. But even then, I don't know. I don't think that would happen. But yeah, I think if someone's heckling, like, it's usually because they're drunk and they don't know what's going on. They missed part of it. They're bored. Something's happening like that. And so it's, I never really try to, I'll give them a couple lines, but sometimes it's bad because, like, if you talk to them a lot, you burn them, and then that gets a laugh. They think that the laugth,
you're part of the show now.
Yeah, and they think, yeah. And I, like, I've had to say to them, I'm like, okay, like, they'll yell something back. I'll say something and get another laugh. They'll yell something back. And then I had that once at a club, and it was going on for, like, 4 or 5 minutes, and then I had to say, I was like, do you notice how every time you talk, no noise? Every time I say something, big laugh. So how about you stop talking? I'll just talk, sure. And then it'll be all laughs.
That's
for
it.
Everybody.
It's really good.
What advice would you give? I mean, were you given advice? Was there a mentor along the road that sort of took Ivan Decker under his wing and said, hey, kid, here's some tips that you need to think about when you're on stage?
Yeah, and I always had a lot of – I tried to just kind of get it from everywhere I could. And I used to go – one of the best things that I was able to do when I started out, because I started before, I mean, this sounds crazy, but I started doing stand-up before the stand-up was on the internet. And so the best part about being a newer comic and being known at the comedy club was that I was allowed in. I didn't have to pay to get in. And so I would go on the weekends and watch every comic that I could. Like, I, you know, you have free time. I was young, I had no money, but I didn't have anything to do. And so I would just go and watch as many headliners as I could, see what they're doing. And, you know, if I was brash enough, go to the green room, ask them for advice, try to see what it is. And they would all have different advice, and I would take it and I wouldn't. But I think the biggest thing is, if you are interested in an art form, consume that art form. Don't just find one artist that you really like and then emulate that, because you'll end up, you won't know. Like, you might find somebody, like, I never knew about Brian Regan until I started doing stand-up.
Right.
And somebody introduced, they're like, oh, you seem like you would really like Brian Regan. And then I heard him, and I was like, oh, this guy's incredible.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have known about him had I not gone and seen other comics and talked to them about who they liked, and really just try to watch as much stand-up comedy as you can. And even if you don't like it, you can always learn something from it.
You may or may not want to mention names, but are there comedians that are successful that you think to yourself, I don't get it?
Oh, a lot. But that's fine. I understand that they have an audience. Because humor's subjective. I think that there's always going to be... I mean, there's restaurants out there that I'm sure if I went to, I'd be like, I hate this. And they sell lots of food. Lots of people like them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I get it. It's fine. But it's not for me. And I think that's the same with comedy. And I think the idea that we all have to be universally liked... You know, it's part of our the core of our being as comedians. We want everybody to like us, but you also have to reconcile with the fact that, like, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to like you, and if people don't like me, it's fine. That's, you know.
No, I think I mean, it's great to have him on the show, because I mean, you know, when I've seen you on stage, you're up there doing your thing, and I always get a chance to say hi after the show. But to have you come here and just talk as a normal person,
he's just like us.
Yeah. And no, congratulations to you. And like I said to Joe, when you mentioned that Ivan Decker was going to be on the chat room, I was very happy to have him here at Tyrant. It's wonderful.
No, absolutely. And I just wonder, as we wrap up the segment, do you set goals for yourself? Like, I know that there's been some milestones. You're a Juno winner.
Yes.
Okay. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
But do you set milestones, or do you set goals for yourself? Like, you know, 5 years from now, I want to be.
Yeah. I mean, I've always just kind of had the same goal, and it's a small one, but it's like, I just want to be doing stand-up for people that want it to be happening. Like, that's it.
It's that simple?
Yeah. Because a lot of times you do stand-up.
You don't want a gazillion dollars. You don't want a hot ride from West Coast Dream Machines.
Well, sure. I mean, that's all nice. That would be nice. That's extra stuff.
You're not saying no, yeah.
But I just want to be able to build a fan base and tour around, and I see comics that do that, and they go to theaters. And, you know, that's always the thing that I've always wanted to do, is get that upgraded state where I have a fan base that sees me, they get me. I don't have to spend the first few minutes of my act kind of like ingratiating. And, you know, there's a real thing that happens once you're known, once you develop a fan base, where you can, you know, you can get right into it. You don't have to come out and be like, hey, here's what, this is a joke about my face that looks weird, and here's where I'm from, and this is what you need to know about me. They know all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like, that's the kind of thing where then the audience feels like a close friend. You're just hanging out. You come out, you can go right into your material. They know what you're here to do, and it's just such a, it's this extra level, I think, that I've seen happen with, I've been lucky enough to open for a lot of successful comedians over the years, and it's so great to watch and to feel the feeling and the energy in that room. Is that's my goal. That's all I want.
Okay, speaking of opening, we're going to wrap up with this question. Your agent calls you and goes, Ivan, sit down. You're not going to believe this. I just got you an opening slot with,
yeah,
fill in the blank. Who is it?
Oh, the person that I would like to open for the most. Brian Regan is a big
one.
Hey,
there we go.
Love to work with him. Seinfeld, it's great. I mean, I'm always thrilled anytime I get to do any of those gigs. I think comics that I would like to, I got to MC for Leno in LA once. That was really fun. There's just so many. And anytime I'm in a room where people want to be there and they're excited about the show.
If people want to track down where you've got any appearances coming up or shows coming up, just your website, best place to track it?
Yeah, ivandecker.com or Instagram. I'm pretty active on there, Ivan W. Decker. I post clips. I also have a new special that is in pre-release right now. You can watch it. It's going to be released on YouTube March 19th, but it's already available on the 800 Pound Gorilla Media website. You can go there. It's a pay-what-you-can model at first. And you can see that. I shot it last year. I'm quite proud of it. I think it's very funny. And I'll be posting clips from that on my socials.
And you know, also, I just got to say, like, you know, he looks clean. He works clean. He dresses impeccably.
Incredible.
He's the full deal.
He's the full deal.
Yeah.
Off stage, he's very blue, folks. He swears like a stable boy. Yeah.
This guy.
We'll shoot a little term out of tequila and see where he goes. That's Ivan Decker, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Hey,
cheers.
Yeah, Ivan.
Cheers.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Nice.
Put this in your map app. 1519 Clyde Avenue. Got it? Now, prepare to be amazed. West Coast Dream Machine Showroom, specializing in exotic classic muscle cars and supercars. Feel yourself in the driver's seat of your dream machine. Maybe a late model or vintage classic Ferrari, Lamborghini, or Maserati. Lease and financing options can make it happen. Start dreaming at wcdreammachines.com. And remember, that red pin of luxury lands at 1519 Clyde Avenue West Van. 778-606-FAST.
Our cars are faster.
You're listening to The Chat Room at Tyron Studios downtown, and this is Sportsnet 650 AM, 96.9 FM HD3. The Chat Room is presented by West Coast Dream Machines on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. West Coast Dream Machines is Vancouver's supercar dealership, offering pre-owned luxury muscle, classic, and rare and exotic vehicles with in-house leasing available. It's a carefully curated collection of premium rides, exotic cars, luxury vehicles, resto mods, and modified muscle cars, all shipped worldwide. They carry the finest lines like Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, and McLaren. Check out their extensive collection at wcdreammachines.com. Now, back to the chat room. And again, your hosts, Joe Leary, Danny Filippone, and Aaron Chapman.
It is the chat room at Tyron Studios, high atop the penthouse in downtown Vancouver. Joe Leary, along with Danny Filippone, the proprietor of the legendary Penthouse Nightclub, and Mr. Aaron Chapman, noted historian, author.
Oh, historian.
Very kind.
Historian,
I like
author.
That. That sounds good.
And, of course, the show is powered by Terramana Tequila, Wild Eye Beer, and our major title sponsor is West Coast Dream Machines on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. WCDreamMachines.com. Rob Frost is the general manager. Welcome back, Rob. Are you having a good time?
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, that was a great show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. It's always a great way to spend a Friday afternoon.
It is indeed.
Get out of the office. Come downtown.
We've got to start selling tickets to this thing.
There we go.
This would be fun. So for those that don't know, West Coast Dream Machines, and Danny, you first told me about this concept, high-end, exotic muscle cars, luxury cars, used, pre-owned, pre-loved, whatever you want to call it, out of West Vancouver.
Yeah.
Because we tape this show in advance of when it airs, we can't talk about what's there in the showroom now, but what's been going out the doors in the last little while?
Well, this week we had, the sun's come out, so that really helps our business. So we've seen a lot of Porsches coming by and a lot of interest in Porsches. We had a local gentleman just pick up his 87 Ferrari Testarossa. He traded in a Porsche GT3 to us. And it's interesting. He's probably late 50s, early 60s. And he said, when I was a teenager, that's the poster that I had in my room.
His dream was coming
true. Testarossa. I had Farrah Fawcett, but he had Testarossa. I didn't get Farrah Fawcett, but he got his Testarossa. So you know what? That's really cool, right? Because
sure.
I always say, and Daniel knows, there's a story. There's always a story.
I had a dream after watching Iron Man, and I dreamt of getting that R8 Spider.
Yeah.
You know, that fancy car, completely out of my league. And I called Rob. I said, Rob, what's it going to take?
Yeah.
He says, leave it with me. And literally 2-3 weeks later, he said, what color do you want? And
I'm the dream merchant.
Yeah, and you and the next thing you know, it was on a truck, carried up, and a month down the road, he says, Dano, come into my shop. And when it came down the ramp on the car, it's like you're standing there, and it's like, wow, this is actually happening, right? And there you go.
So I'm just curious, like, if I walk on the lot, and let's say I want a Lamborghini Countach or whatever my dream machine
is.
If you don't have it, how do you get it?
Yeah. Well, you know, we carry about 140 cars in inventory, and we've shopped all across literally North America. In fact, I've flown to France to buy a car. I was there for 2 days, bought a car, and came back. So, you know, when you're buying those types of cars, you develop the connections very quickly. And I'll get phone calls all the time with offerings of these types of cars. And through the network... you know, in Canada, of course, the U.S. is 10 times our population with the nice weather. So there's a lot of those types of cars in the U.S. I have a lot of contacts there. They network. I can sort of put a request in, and it starts coming at me. They know we're buyers. They know we're serious.
Is there one car that somebody asked for, and you just said, this is going to be a tough one. This is going to be a tough one to find.
Well, it's we call that factory ordering a used car.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Which is a very, not so much the car itself, but the color combinations.
Sure.
Right? Like I have a local West Van guy I know quite well. He wants a very specific Ferrari. I can get the Ferrari, but I'm not sure they ever made it in the color combinations he wants. So, you know. And today I see, you can wrap it and it looks like it's, it's been freshly painted. But, we do get that.
You mentioned something very important because I think hot cars, luxury cars, are probably more enticing when the sun is shining and the weather is warm, right?
I can tell you there has been a big difference this week in our showroom traffic. Just based on, I've had cars pulling up with convertible tops down.
Absolutely.
And, finally here to see you. I've been waiting for good weather. So we're excited for that weather. I mean, that's where it's at, you know.
Point of question to both of you guys. Danny, what is your dream machine? And Aaron, what is your dream machine?
Oh,
so, Danny,
gosh.
While you're talking, Aaron's going to be thinking.
I mean, I think Rob and I have been talking. I had to get through the growing up the boys phase and the soccer vans.
Yeah.
And then I got into which one?
A new Windstar.
A new Windstar. I had my dream machine. I had the R8 Spider.
Right. Yeah.
And that was, to me, it was the dream machine.
Sure.
And I got it through Rob. And driving that, every time I got it, just to go to the store, I would tell my wife, I got to go pick up a gallon of milk. I got to go, but we have some at home. I'll go get some more.
Yeah.
It was just so
much fun. He never
was
so accommodating for grocery shopping until he got the R8,
it was just
right?
so much fun to get it in the car.
Aaron, what's your dream?
You know, as a teenager, I would have said a Lamborghini. You know, like, in more last sort of 15, 20 years, as I got sort of more maybe attenuated to that Rat Pack era, it's not even a classic car. It's not even a classic car. It's probably, I don't even know what category to put it in. It was just a 1960s Avanti, that old Studebaker Avanti, which I just had, which was a weird kind of boxy car there. I just liked it.
You looked good in that.
You know what?
They were kind of cool looking cars. So it's not even a, but you mentioned Ferraris. Do you still have to do an interview to buy a Ferrari?
Depending on what the model is, but that still
exists
today.
Is that still the case? Wow.
So in fact, you have to buy multiple Ferraris to get the one you really want. Wow. That exists not only with Ferrari, Lamborghini, and Porsche as well.
And what are the interview questions? What do they ask you?
Well, it's not so much an interview now. It's more, okay, so let's use the 24 GT3 Porsche, for example. New body style. If you want that car, there's very limited numbers of them. I have 4 Macans that you have to buy, and then you'll get an order for GT3. That happens.
Interesting.
That happens.
Did you know that, Joe?
No, I did not.
That happens today.
This is news to me.
And Ferrari, of the top. Now with the that car can go from, you know, $1 million to $1.5 million in just resale. So they're very selective, and you need a history with Ferrari to get those models. There's so limited supply.
Interesting.
You have to be approved by them to get those cars.
Are there people that just buy cars to collect cars, or do they buy cars because they want to drive these cars? Both?
There's both. There's people that buy them. There's driver's cars, and there's just collector cars. Collector's where they, cars, they stay in they stay in a heated garage, and they're just looked at and enjoyed that way too, which is great. And that's the neat part about it. I appreciate all of it, the drivers and the collectors. It's
called West Coast Dream Machines, wcdreammachines.com online. Check out the inventory. You're going to regret you looked at it because you're going to go, I want that, I want that one, I want that one. Rob Frost, General Manager of West Coast Dream Machines. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Rob.
Great show.
Thanks,
I really enjoyed it.
Excellent.
Cheers.
Great.
Yes.
West Coast Dream Machines, a carefully curated collection of luxury, muscle, classic, rare and exotic cars built from 3 decades of sourcing expertise. A different kind of supercar showroom. 1519 Clyde Avenue, West Vancouver. Look, salivate, order, lease, purchase, finance. Get behind the wheel of your dream Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati, Rolls, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston Martin machine. West Coast Dream Machines. WCDreamMachines.com. 778-606-FAST.
Our cars are faster.
You're listening to The Chat Room at Tyron Studios downtown, and this is Sportsnet 650 AM, 96.9 FM HD3.
The Chat Room is presented by West Coast Dream Machines on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. West Coast Dream Machines is Vancouver's supercar dealership, offering pre-owned luxury, muscle, classic, and rare and exotic vehicles with in-house leasing available. It's a carefully curated collection of premium rides, exotic cars, luxury vehicles, resto mods, and modified muscle cars, all shipped worldwide. They carry the finest lines like Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, and McLaren. Check out their extensive collection at wcdreammachines.com.
Now, back to the chat room. And again, your hosts, Joe Leary, Danny Filipponi, and Aaron Chapman.
We are in the chat room at Tyron Studios, high atop the penthouse, as Aaron Chapman loves to tell us. Legendary penthouse. You've written books about the history of Vancouver.
Yes.
What's the book called that you wrote about the penthouse?
It's called Liquor, Lust, and the Law.
Liquor, Lust, and the Law. And there's all 3 of those elements in the story. Next show, guarantee, we're going to spend some time and talk about the history of this building, Danny Filipponi, because it's incredible. Let's talk about Tyron Studios. Daniel Dirksen is the
artistic producer of
Tyron Studios. What's the relationship here? How did you guys all kind of merged together, and how did that happen?
Well, we had a room upstairs at the penthouse. We've had it here for 50, 60 years, and for many of the years it was called the Steak Loft. And the Steak Loft was a restaurant back in the days where High's Encore and my Uncle Joe used to cook up the steaks here for all
used
all
to get
the
steaks direct from High's.
From High's, and this room was dormant for many, many years. And it wasn't till about, I'm going to say, maybe 10 years ago that Dan and his partner Dave approached the penthouse and was interested in the space upstairs. But it wasn't for music. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, it was basically theater that got us into this. My co-producer David and I founded a theater company out of theater school. And initially, 10 years ago, we were using the upstairs. We'd found it was a cheap rehearsal space.
It was a black box theater.
And then, we basically made this proposal in 2018. Our theater company just happened to not have a whole lot in the coffers that year. And we thought, let's make a proposal to Danny that we basically transform the upstairs into a pop-up black box box theater
so,
and do this play.
Was this just like storage area at that
Pretty
time?
Much. Kind yeah,
was,
of.
Was
yeah.
there a bar here?
No.
Nothing. Okay.
It right. was a black box.
Right. Yeah, it right. was a you know empty play. We even painted it a bit to make it more like a black box, but it really was just you know storage. There were boxes in here, but it was not right. a black box there. But we found this play and you know David and I you know put it up as a two hand play, and it actually was like a runaway success. The CBC got a hold of it. It won an award, and we kind of said, you know, why don't we stay up here and make
well,
this little arts hub?
What happened was people were coming to the play early, and they were having a couple libations prior to the play.
Yeah.
And Dan says, you know, is it okay if we, you know, serve these people a glass of wine and a beer? I said, well, certainly, right? So once COVID hit, it sort of put everything to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
But that's when Dan came up with the idea, let's make Tyrant Studios into a jazz bar, a music venue.
Yeah.
And at first, it was going to be this secret bar, these pop-up secret bars in Vancouver, and it is a secret still to this day.
There's still no signage on the inside of the building.
Yeah, we don't. Dan doesn't advertise it, and yet Dan, tell them how people know about it and what goes on here.
Well, I mean, I guess it's you know word of mouth. And people. I mean, to some degree, people stumble upon it. Like, of course, people come up the stairs and they're like, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm in the wrong place." But then they're like, "Maybe I'm in the right place."
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
And it definitely seems to have in these like last couple of years since we reopened post COVID, it really seems to have taken off in that way. And you know, our jazz nights are busy all the time. But we also still have people coming up saying, hey, I never knew this place existed. And I love that. I love being in that little lightning in a bottle spot.
So to be clear, when somebody is here on a weekend night enjoying the penthouse, Tyrant Studios is available to them?
Well, not really.
Not when really. So it's kind Tyrant, of a private
you,
club.
Yeah, you have to come to Tyrant
okay.
to
yeah.
Tyrant.
Yeah. Sure.
And when you're in Tyrant, you are allowed to come downstairs
right.
to the penthouse. But right. most people stick to Tyrant, although we do get some looky-loos for sure, and some right. couples are up here to see a jazz show, and they'll wander down to the penthouse. But for most part, I would say Dan has his own fall. I mean, last week he had a flamenco. He had a.
We had a big Brazilian band for Carnaval.
It was a dance party.
Yeah, a big dance party. I cleared out all the tables, and we just had people dancing until the wee hours.
So is it a space available for rent?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I book regularly. We have stuff every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it's usually music, sometimes comedy. So I book those. But you can even rent one of those weekend nights if you get a hold of me enough, you know, ahead of time. But we'll rent other nights of the week for, you know,
so
staff parties, whatever you want.
Everything from flamenco to radio show at Tyrant Studios.
You could say maybe our flagship for regular programming is Friday jazz, because that is the thing we kind of came up with, you know, jazz bar kind of thing. But Saturdays is usually where you'll find more like Latin dance nights or indie rock nights or things like that. And then Thursdays, we've been putting on comedy. We've got singer-songwriter kind of nights. So you just check our calendar to find out exactly. But we try and keep a bit of a theme that you get the kind of Friday jazz thing.
It's amazing to see it. Amazing to see it, how it's taken off. And it's kind of, you know, the best little secret in downtown Vancouver at the same time. But it's packed here. You come in here on weekends especially, and it's hopping. It's so great to see.
Yeah, totally.
And I'll be here. April 13th.
Yeah, you'll be here April 13th.
I'll be doing a show here April 13th.
What are you doing?
I'm going to be doing some music with a friend of mine named Eugene Ripper, who founded a long-standing review in Vancouver called the Fast Folk Underground.
Okay.
He's coming in from Toronto, where he lives now, to do the show with me. And I'm going to do some music. I'm going to do some reading from Liquor, Lust, and the Law,
sure.
maybe set to some music, and a mixed bag of stuff. It's going to be pretty entertaining.
Oh, that is cool. Tyrant Studios, Dan Dirksen, how do people find Tyrant Studios again?
Hey, just Google Tyrant Studios. We are tyrantstudios.yvr on Instagram, and we put out a monthly calendar. Just check us out online.
Well, it's the home of the chat room on Sportsnet 650. And we
it's great. Great to have you upstairs, Dan.
Thank you so much.
Totally, yeah. Great to have you guys here.
Cheers.
This is awesome.
That is a wrap. We thank all of our guests. Of course, we thank Ivan Decker. We thank Mr. Jonathan Simkin of 604 Records. And we need to talk about his podcast, which we neglected to mention. It was called
Bubblicious. Well, I think he changed the name three times.
Leave it to Jonathan to make a complex
name.
It's
Canuckle Duck or Canuckle Puck.
We got to find it again.
Sorry, Jonathan, but thank you so much for joining us. Comedian Ivan Decker. We also had Halford and Bruff from Sportsnet 650 AM, Dan Dirksen from the Tyrant Studios. And our thanks, as always, to Terramana Tequila. Our thanks to Wild Eye Brewing and West Coast Dream Machines, the high-end cars. We got to try and see if we can maybe do a segment on an upcoming show where we record ourselves driving a West Coast Dream Machine.
Hey, that sounds good.
This doesn't sound outrageous, does it?
Necessity, yes.
Rob Frost, we're talking to you, Rob Frost, okay?
We'll have to leave a credit card deposit, yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and thank you to producer Eddie Gregory. That is
Eddie,
a wrap.
Thanks,
we'll see you next time in the chat room in Tyrant Studios.
Yay! Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to the chat room at Tyrant Studios in downtown Vancouver on Sportsnet 650 AM 96.9 FM HD3. The chat room is presented by West Coast Dream Machines on Clyde Avenue in West Vancouver. It's Vancouver's supercar dealership offering pre-owned luxury muscle, classic, and rare and exotic vehicles with in-house leasing available. West Coast Dream Machines ship worldwide and only the finest lines of automobiles like Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, and McLaren. Check out their extensive collection at wcdreammachines.com. Follow the chat room on Instagram, The Chat Room Tyrant Studios. The chat room is produced by Eddie Gregory.